Kerry's Hyundai. Believe everything you hear. Kerry's of Cork, Mallow and Middleton. Kerry's.ie.
Red FM. Good evening, folks. Hope you're well on this Sunday evening. A packed show on the way tonight. Reaction from Moran Abbey to come after they were beaten in the All-Ireland final.
Look, I can't be prouder of my girls. You know, they're full of mass effort all year, and you know, and they're full of mass effort in again today. So, look, we're very, very disappointed at the moment, and we will be for a while. Like, it's not easy to get over it.
Also tonight, an in-depth chat with Colm O'Neill and Aidan Walsh about their international rules experience.
Like Colm said, it's put yourself against professionals, fellas that are on crazy money. I think he meant Nat Nui is after signing a new contract, $1 million a year or something like that, and there he was playing, like I said, during the field, like, you know, kind of against him. I know he's an absolute massive man, but...
We'll also talk about Munster Club football final tonight, and we'll talk Liverpool between now and 7 on the bench. Great start to the show. Liverpool's not even that hard a word to say.
You were going to say something about my beloved Liverpool.
Your beloved Liverpool. Rory and Lisa here with you until 7 o'clock. Get in touch at Big Red Bench on Twitter. 0868104106 is our text number. We're going to talk more now, very, very shortly. First, though, Lisa's going to wrap up today's action.
Well, looking at the Premier League, and just two games today, wins for Man City and Spurs. And first, to look at the early game at St Mary's and the win for the champions. Alan Lewis reports.
Southampton 0, Manchester City 3. A clinical performance from City, who leapfrogged the Saints into second place. Yaya Toure broke the deadlock just after half-time, his shot taking a wicked deflection past Forster. City were then reduced to 10 men when Mangala was shown a second yellow card. Southampton pushed forward but were caught on the break. Frank Lampard scoring a trademark goal from 20 yards before Clichy wrapped things up late on. Southampton's first home defeat of the season. It finished Southampton 0, Manchester City 3.
Meanwhile, Tottenham pulled off a win over Everton after going behind in that game, getting just their third home win of the season, and Adam Lindsay reports.
It finished Tottenham 2, Everton 1, and could this win mark a turning point for Mauricio Pochettino's side? They showed great character to come from behind after Kevin Morales put the visitors ahead with a sublime effort from the edge of the box. Spurs didn't give up, though, and equalised through an opportunistic shot from Christian Eriksen before a well-taken goal from Roberto Soldado gave them the lead before half-time. They weathered the storm in the second period as Everton pushed for an equaliser and had their hard work rewarded. At White Hart Lane, it finished Tottenham 2, Everton 1.
Here at home, Cork City Women's FC suffered a heavy defeat this afternoon in the Women's National League. They went down 5-0 away to Galway FC. Turning to get a games in and defeat for Moran Abbey ladies this afternoon in their All-Ireland Club Final against Termon. The Donegal Outfish took the top honours with a 3-12-1-13 win. Austin Stacks won the Munster Club Football Final at Páirc Uí Chaoimh, beating the Nar of Waterford 3-5-2-4. Stacks will play Sleacht Neill in the All-Ireland Semi-Finals. The Derry champions were 1-10-1-9 winners over Omagh in a thriller at the Athletic Ground. In rugby in the Pro 12, it's Glasgow Warriors 19, Dragons 15 as they approach full time. In some bad news in rugby today, South Africa captain John de Villiers' participation in next year's World Cup is in genuine doubt. The centre suffered a significant ligament and muscle damage to his left knee in yesterday's defeat to Wales at the Millennium Stadium. De Villiers also dislocated his kneecap in that incident. In basketball, results for Cork sides today in the men's Premier League, CNS UCC Demons enjoyed a 94-73 win over UL Eagles. That's 94-73. However, Belfast Star have beaten Neptune by 101-89, and in the Women's Premier League, Singleton Super Valley Brunel have beaten Maxall WIT Wildcats 65-60. In some golf news from early morning, Jordan Spieth smashed the course record in Sydney to claim the Australian Open. He carded a final round 63 to end the weekend on 13 under par, a full 6 shots clear of Aussie Rod Pampling. Rory McIlroy ended the weekend on 2 over following a final round of 72. And in racing, the Sandra Hughes trained Lieutenant Colonel has won the Hatton's Grace Hurdle at Fairy House. The 72 shot romped home ahead of the Jessica Harrington trained Jetson.
Cheers, Lisa. We're going to start with Moran Abbey and their defeat today in the All-Ireland final. We're going to hear from their coach Shane Ryan. Before that, Lisa got the analysis of Mary White from the Evening Echo.
Well, kind of remind you about the All-Ireland final this year between Cork and Dublin, although without the combat. But I suppose any game that has 5 innings and I think something like 29 scores, you know, is fierce exciting. And throw in the fact that player of the match, Geraldine McLaughlin, has an unbelievable game, you know, an individual display like that. Someone kicking 3, the bulk of which came in the second half, you know, is an absolute great advertisement for ladies football, to be fair.
Talk us through the game. Mourne Abbey came out of the blocks very well with a very good start, going, what was it, 3 points, no score up?
Yeah, they did. They got 3 points in as many minutes. And Tremont then kind of slightly got back into it. And Mourne Abbey, I suppose, probably looked a bit nervous then at that stage. Tremont then had a fair sin just before half time, and Mourne Abbey kind of kicked on and they went ahead 4 points in at half time. And speaking to Shane Hernan afterwards, Mourne Abbey coach, he reckoned that the half time whistle probably came a bit too soon for them, because not that they got complacent, but you know, obviously you're going in on a high at half time, and they knew Tremont were going to come back at them in the second, but probably not so much as they did. I think Tremont kicked something like 1-5 or 1-6 without reply. And Mourne Abbey, you know, traditionally this year, the first 10 minutes after the second half is when they actually kicked on, and when they put teams away, and they didn't do that this time around. And I suppose then what happened was, with about 15 minutes to go, 15 minutes to go, Mourne Abbey's midfield were probably missing. You know, they went missing, and Renan and Dominic Gallagher made a number of changes. But to be honest, I think it was too late at that stage. Tremont were just, you know, psychologically, every time they were winning the ball or dispossessing Mourne Abbey, they were gaining confidence, and the Tremont crowd were actually, supporters were actually huge today, and obviously vocally then that spurred them on a bit more, you know.
Was the stage just that bit too big for this Mourne Abbey side, do you think, Mary, today? Nerves and things like that getting to them?
I don't really know, to be honest, because I suppose when you think of the fact that 8 of their players had won a Junior All-Ireland and an Intermediate All-Ireland title in 2005 and 2007. So they had the experience, and obviously they had the likes of Ciara Sullivan, Captain Oisín O'Sullivan, Dearna Sullivan, you know, Cork senior players. And they have the likes as well, Cathy Ann Stack, a superb game as full back. There were a number of younger players, you know, but those younger players, you know, has stepped up massively today. Aisling O'Sullivan, cornerback, was excellent. You've Laura Fitzgerald, who kicked something like 5 or 6 points in the first half. You know, she's only 19. She had a great game as well. But maybe in the middle of the field, they probably were a bit lacking when things, you know, for someone to take a game by the scruff of the neck. Sheila O'Callaghan, you know, she's a seasoned inter-county player as well. She was brought on, at, you know, halfway through the second half to try and, you know, rectify that. But as I say, it was probably a bit too late. So I really don't know, to be honest. I think it was just a case of Mourne Abbey didn't take the chances in the second half, probably, and Tremont just kicked on.
And Tremont, the star of that show there, Geraldine McLaughlin, you've already mentioned, scoring 3-8 today. Where did she play? Where did she line out?
She started at full forward. She's the captain of the side, and she was the main woman to watch beforehand. You know, I seen someone there about 2 weeks ago, just in the lead-up to the game, and they were watching the All-Ireland semi-final, and they compared McLaughlin to young Cora Staunton. So that's the kind of calibre that you're looking at. And I didn't realise, but prior to today, she had scored 22 goals and 29 points in the championship alone this year. You know, phenomenal scoring. And 3-8, I think the bulk of that, as I say, came in the second half. And it was just a pleasure to watch her in action.
Finally, Mary, though, you know, Mourne Abbey have represented the county with distinction this year. It's a fantastic year for them, starting off with the county, their first senior county win, but to go so far and, as I said, representing the county very well today.
You know, they're, in fairness, they're massive credit to Cork and massive credit to Munster. You know, they've carried themselves brilliantly. These young players, their management team, the backroom team, let's say, in the club have been so accommodating and absolutely fantastic. The chairperson, you know, Catherine Crowley, Dominic Gallagher, the manager, Shane Hernan, the coach, they've been so nice. And, you know, the amount of tears that were shed after the final, Lisa, was... I actually have never seen it, to be honest. You know, Dunamore had lost a few All-Ireland finals, and Ainshoe Overs had lost 2 All-Ireland finals before they'd won their first in 2010 against Carnarvon. But the Mourne Abbey girls are absolutely devastated after the game, and you know they should be so proud of what they've achieved. You know, no one would have said at the start of the year that they would have won their first senior championship title, but they did, and then they went down to win Munster, and they the entire club and Clyde down there should be absolutely proud of them.
There's no doubt in any way with what they've taken, I'm sure, from this All-Ireland Championship run will stand them in good stead for the club championship when they start off again next year to defend their title. But for now, Mary White, thank you very much for your analysis this evening.
Thank you.
That's Mary White of the Evening Echo discussing Moranabbey's defeat today in the All-Ireland final. Now for the reaction of the Moranabbey camp and Shane Ronan.
Yeah, we're absolutely gutted. Just back in the bus now, and the dressing room was a very, very sad place. Utter devastation there, and it's very hard to put into words how we feel at the moment.
Over the 60 minutes or so, how did you feel the game was going for you?
We were very happy at halftime. We were 10 points to 1-3 up. We felt our game, our running game was working well against them. We were keeping McLaughlin fairly quiet, and we felt that if we kept that going, we were going to be in a very good position. But I think things we probably didn't think about at halftime was the fact that our running game was causing them problems, but they were fouling. They were systematically fouling us, and they committed 21 fouls in the first half compared to our 10. And I think that was take its toll on the girls. We didn't realise it, but I'm not going to make any bones about it. We're very, very annoyed about things that happened during the game. 40 fouls, they committed over double the fouls that we committed in the game, and we ended up with more players in bin than them. And I think over the course of the game, that really told. A few of our big players there were some terrible tackles put in them, probably red cards, and that told at the end of the day. We missed a few chances because people were tired, and then McLaughlin took over, and she had a serious game. She scored 3-8. We can't argue with that, but we're very disappointed about a few things, and we felt that the game became a game of rugby there at times. And I'm probably going to get a bit of grief for saying that, but I can't not be honest, and we were very disappointed. We committed, we got 3 yellow cards, they got 2 yellow cards, they committed twice as many fouls, and some of the fouls on Bjorn and Kira Sullivan were no place in any lady football field, and no place in any sports field, as far as I'm concerned. But yeah. Look, and that hope doesn't sound like Shaw Grape, but we're very disappointed with that. We feel the things have been done properly. It could have been different results, but obviously we didn't call in McLaughlin, and at the end of the day, that's what really matters. She scored 3-8, and that's what beat us.
Yeah, it went very close contest wise Shane, for a finish. The girls gave everything, and we've talked about in the preview how they've acted a very professional outfit in their preparation and execution all year, and it was no different today.
Oh no, they were, I can't fault our own girls at all. They were outstanding. They put everything into it. All of them, they just came on, they gave everything, we probably needed those little things to go with us in the Northern Ireland final, and it didn't. And I'm very, very proud of them this evening. It's an interesting, but I'm probably prouder than I have been all year of them. To the way they remain so dignified and disciplined, throughout the game, and they kept going to the final whistle. We went 4 or 5 points down, we got it back to a point. Could have got in for another goal maybe, and then they were bombing up the field, and they ended up getting a goal out of it, which is probably a big turning point with 5 minutes to go. But look, I can't be prouder of my girls. They've put a massive effort all year in, and they put a massive effort in again today. So look, they've had a great year. We probably won't realise that for a while yet, we'll have time to reflect on it there in the next few weeks. We can see what a good year they had winning their first county and winning the Munster title. Look, we're very, very disappointed at the moment, and we will be for a while. It's not easy to get over it.
And I know it is very raw, Shane, but even to hear your disappointment goes to show that while you won your first senior county championship this year, you were looking to go all the way today, and it was by no means bonus territory, and that attitude should stand to you for the future.
Yeah, hopefully we'll look. Our target was the county at the start of the year, and when we won that, we always said we drive on and try and do more in 1 month. And look, the kind of way we've looked at it is that we couldn't think about next year or a couple of years down the line. You have to kind of deal with the here and now, and hopefully that's what we're trying to do today. You know, we can't be relying on that we might be in this position again in the future. We wanted to take the chance today, but look, it didn't go away, and hopefully we can regroup and go again next year. Like, you know, look, there's a great basis there for going forward. It will be difficult, but you know, look, I'm sure they'll take a lot of heart from what they've done all year, and they might bottle up the disappointment and the hurt that's there today, and hopefully they might try to win again next year, you know. And look, we'll deal with that there in the end of January or something like that. But you know, at the moment, it's just hard to think about next year, and hard to think about even the year we've had. It's just kind of, you know, very raw and very emotional at the moment.
I know, indeed. Well, look, Shane, you've been absolutely fantastic representatives for the county. Pass on our commiserations to the girls themselves and the rest of your management team. Thanks for speaking to us this evening.
All right, thanks very much, Lisa.
Shane Ronan there of Moran Abbey after their disappointing defeat in the All-Ireland final today. Now we're going to move on, and Austin Stacks are Munster Club football champions. For the first time since 1976, the Kerry champions beat the Nair of Waterford 3-5-2-4 at Páirc Uí Chaoimh this afternoon. And Lisa's been speaking to Dennis Hurley of the Irish Examiner about the game. She put it to him that very much like their semi-final win over Ballincollig, Stacks were slow to get going.
It was kind of strange. Like, they were down 1-3 to no score After 8 minutes, I think it was, but the Nair only scored another point in the 13th minute, and then a goal with about 21 minutes left in the second half. It was very strange that the Nair had such a good start and then just almost completely collapsed. Like, they had 8 wides in the second half, and some of them were very score, but like, Austin Sachs shooting wasn't great either, but I suppose they were just kind of better overall. And once they did get going, then they were on top, even though they were down to 14 minutes when Shane Carroll was sent off. He got 2 yellow cards in quick succession, but overall you couldn't have any complaints. Austin Sachs were better. I suppose they just kind of they kept their composure a bit more in the second half.
And did you know Stacks, their first two scores were goals, Dennis.
Yeah.
Were they just opportunities that opened up for them, or did it look like a very concerted effort to go for a goal and get the green flags raised early on?
I suppose it wasn't a really concerted effort. They had had, I think, about 3 or 4 point opportunities before the first goal, and their shooting was fierce bad early on. And then the goal just came. It was a ball from Shane Carroll, actually, the fellow who would be sent off a few minutes later, his ball into Shane O'Callaghan. And he had 3 men around him, and he somehow managed to wriggle through them all, and it was a great finish. He was probably fouled. If he hadn't got the goal, it would have been a penalty. And then the second one came from a poor kick out, and O'Callaghan, who was excellent also, he had the ball to David Mannix, and he finished well. That was one thing that they targeted. The Denier were persisting with short kick outs, and that really pressured them. And they got a good 2 scores, or the turnovers created.
Now, you've mentioned 8 wides from the Nair in the second half, and
yeah,
a very low scoring game, but their second goal, Donaghy was dispossessed in this, and then Stacks got caught for men when the Nair went on the attack. At this stage in the game, did it look like it could have been a contest to finish it out, or?
Yeah, it was kind of strange again. It probably was a foul on Donaghy. I haven't seen any replays or anything since, but he did get hurt. He needed, like, the physio was on while the Nair were attacking. And it was a lovely move, I suppose. They just had, they managed to create an overlap, and Craig Guyrie gave it to Seamus Lawler, and he gave it to Michael Morden, who was totally unmarked, and he just started it in. But they just didn't build on it. It was kind of strange again. I suppose 3 minutes later, Stacks cut through, and Greg Horan would have got a goal, only for put back by the goalie Tom Wall, and McCarthy finished it. And the Nair just couldn't respond. Like, they just, I don't know what it was. The shooting, it was just collectively, it was just not up to scratch. Because they were creating chances, but I don't know, they just kind of snatching at them. Maybe, I suppose, thinking that time was running out. And Stacks were just able to kind of pick off the points then when the opportunities came.
And over the balance of 60 minutes, how was it as a football contest? Because, as you said, very low scoring, and by the sounds of things, a lot of a lot of poor shooting. Was it a poor final?
It was a poor game of football, I suppose. As a contest, it was kind of absorbing, all right, in that, you know, they were kind of neck and neck the whole time, but, you know, it didn't leave a lot to be desired. And it was strange, like, because the conditions were fine, you know, there was no real wind at all. And the pitch was good and firm for this time of year, so it's kind of hard to put your finger on just exactly why the shooting was so bad. But it won't be remembered too long. I suppose Sacks will remember it because it's their first month to win in 38 years, but otherwise no one will be recalling it with too much fun, I'd say.
That's Dennis Hurley there of the Irish Examiner speaking about Austin Stack's win over the Nards today, 3-5 to 2-4 down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. More Gaelic games coming up in the show a little bit later on. We'll be talking to Colm O'Neill and Aidan Walsh about their international rules experience. But now we're going to move on to the Premier League. And Liverpool picked up what looks like a massively important win over Stoke yesterday. For more on this, we are joined on the line by James Pearce of the Liverpool Echo. And James, first off, thanks so much for talking to us. Is yesterday's win, is this the corner turn now for Liverpool, do you think?
I think it has to be. Yeah, I think they have to try and ensure it is. I mean, it was far from convincing. It certainly wasn't pretty for long periods, but I think Brendan Rodgers spoke in the build-up to the game about how, you know, in the predicament they find themselves in at the moment, you have to sacrifice a bit of style to get results, and that was certainly what we saw at Anfield, because it was a real dogfight for long periods. But give them credit, because they showed a lot of character and resilience to get the job done in the end.
Literally blood, sweat, and I'm sure some tears somewhere for Johnson's goal.
Yes, I mean, it was two unlikely heroes, really, because you think of all the sticks that's been flying around this season, probably two who have received more than most would be Glenn Johnson and Simon Mignolet. And you know, if you were looking for who was going to provide the inspiration late on yesterday, you certainly wouldn't have predicted it would be those two. But, you know, yeah, big credit to Johnson, because, when Ricky Lambert's header came back off the underside of the bar, he was very brave to throw himself in there like that. He got a kick in the head from Eric Peters for his troubles, but perfect time for him to score his first goal for 2 years. And then I think what followed after that was pretty predictable, really. The late Stoke onslaught, Anfield kind of racked by nerves, 7 minutes of stoppage time, and in that period, Mignolet made a fantastic save to deny Bojan, who was outstanding for Stoke all afternoon. And you could really feel the tension and pressure lifting at the final whistle, because it's been such a torrid period, and now Liverpool have to try and look forward and build on it.
A lot's been made about Steven Gerrard and his decline in form this season. He made a cameo appearance yesterday. There's talk in the papers today of a falling out with Brendan Rodgers, which they've both denied. So what is the story with Gerrard this season, do you think?
Well, there's certainly no falling out with Brendan Rodgers. That's, you know, it's absolutely rubbish. I think any suggestion that the two of them have fallen out, I think there's a lot of great respect between the two of them, and that hasn't changed. I think all we're seeing now is, you know, common sense, really, that at the age of 34, you can't expect Steven Gerrard to be firing all cylinders for three games in the space of 6 or 7 days, which is what we've seen this week. Rodgers has always said, you know, he has to manage his workload, and you know, Liverpool have to find ways to win without Gerrard. And, you know, it certainly worked well yesterday, having Lucas Leiva back in that holding midfield role. And You know, what a substitute to be able to bring on for the closing stages. Because, you know, when Gerrard did come on with, you know, 15, 20 minutes to go, it gave the whole ground a lift.
And what about for Brendan himself, that result yesterday? Because, you know, we've talked about it here on the show that there's no immediate pressure on his job at the moment anyway, but it was a huge result for him, and you could tell by his reaction.
You could, yeah. It was quite funny, really, because I think he prides himself on his calm and measured approach to life on the touchline most of the time, and, you know, he never gets too carried away if they win, and never gets too down if they lose. But no, I think his emotions were laid bare when that winning goal went in. He was charging off down the touchline, and I think he stopped about halfway short of getting, actually reaching the cop. But you could see what it meant to him, because it has been a real tough period, and you're right, his job's been under no immediate threat. However, when you see Liverpool perform as poorly as they have done in recent weeks, some people do start to ask questions about whether the climb will be arrested. And You know, I think what the midweek performance in Europe and the one yesterday has proved is that the players are still, you know, 100% right behind him. And, you know, certainly after what he achieved at Anfield last season, he deserves the time and patience to be able to put everything right.
And speaking of Europe, a massive match on the horizon with Basel. How much has being in the Champions League this season affected Liverpool's kind of overall performance, the fact that they have to play Saturday, Wednesday almost every week?
Yeah, I think it's certainly been a contributing factor to the poor results. I think, you know, that was a huge advantage they found themselves in last season, where Rodgers said himself about, you know, how much work he could get done on the training ground, and how, you know, that was a big help, having a bit almost, you know, they virtually had a full week to prepare for every game last season, because they didn't really have a run in either of the two domestic cups either. And that's just not been the case this year. And especially when, you know, when things are going well, you don't really need to work on things too much. It's just a case of recovery and go again. But when things are wrong, like they have been going wrong this season, you need time on the training ground, and they haven't had that. I mean, you take this week as an example. Liverpool didn't get back from Bulgaria till, you know, 3:30 in the morning on Friday morning. And then, you know, they played Stoke at 3:00 on Saturday, so it's such a short turnaround. It has contributed to it, but that was, you know, that was why Liverpool did so much business in the summer, to ensure they had a bigger squad to cope. The problem's been that too many of the new signings haven't been able to come in and hit the ground running.
That's James Pearce there of the Liverpool Echo, speaking about Liverpool's season to date. Right, Anna, under-14s football club were named the Reblog winners of the month for November this week. They claimed their first county championship win and were honoured at the event in the Rochetown Park Hotel. Matt O'Leary, Anna Juvenile Chairman, spoke to Lisa about their journey to championship success.
Well, I suppose we in the Eastern Division, we played Father O'Neill's in the final above in Carrie and Navarre. It was a good tough game, and we came through the physical side of it, and we were just probably a little bit cuter from the football point of view, and so we found it a bit easier to get our scores, so we were more ahead in the scoreboard than it was competitively. Like, it was quite a competitive game, and I suppose we played Granard Gales in the county semi-final, which I'd say was our probably toughest game with 3 or 4 years with that group. They were an excellent team, and we were quite lucky to come through that one. And I suppose maybe they were a team we hadn't played before, so we didn't know much about them. So it was literally the experience of the lads on the night, really pulled themselves through, really, when we were down 5 or 6 points, I'd say, with 10 minutes to go. So that was our kind of get out of jail card use. So we were a bit more grounded for this final than when we were playing Ballinscarty again, having lost them in the failure final previously. So we were ready for that one then when it came. So we were delighted with our chance to we felt that we had the best on the 14 team in that grade, so it was nice to prove it at the end of the year.
The failure final, was it a factor for you?
Well, I suppose to lose a game in that manner, but a sucker punch with the last kick in the game, and the game was over, so we had no right to reply as such. We had no chance to get back into the game. It was just over. So a fantastic way to win a game, and best luck to them on the day, to be fair. But it was nice to get that chip off our shoulder, if you like, because we were annoyed over it.
This bunch of young lads, did they appreciate the achievement of the county success and the big wins they had along the way?
I think, I suppose, the beauty of kids, I suppose, is sometimes they don't really care. They just go out and play with a bit of abandon, and there is a bit of cavalier to their play, you know. So you kind of don't want them to take it too seriously either, like, but yet they're a competitive bunch. Like, when it's put up to them, they like to react in the correct manner. So overall, they do realise now, I'd say, more in hindsight, because there's been such a fuss made over it from literally people in the parish that they've met since, and telling them what a great bunch of lads they are and stuff like that. So I think they're more realised after than they did before, really, you know. So,
and there's a bunch of them here tonight, and the Reblog Awards, and plenty of the speeches here tonight talking about fostering this success now for the future. That's what it's all about.
It is, and I suppose, like, we've had very good people involved in our club at the juvenile side for 10 or 15 years, and like, we've been lucky that there is a fostering element to it, and we've been trying to bring lads through to adult level, and it seems to be getting harder and harder to keep lads playing once they hit kind of 17. So we're hoping that success breeds interest and breeds further success, so you'll be hoping that the bigger number of your lads that can sample a bit of success, you know, especially 14, 15, 16, that'll give them the interest to stay playing and give them the appetite to continue to try and win some more. Because, like, there's nothing gives you the appetite for winning only having a taste of it, and then you want more. So you'll be hoping that will breed that in them as such, you know.
Congratulations and thanks for speaking to us.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
That's Matt O'Leary, Aoife, juvenile chairman there, speaking to Lisa after they won the Rebel Oak for November this week for their under 14 football exploits. Down at the Rochetown Park Hotel in conjunction with award sponsors Common Sports and media partners Corkswell FM and the Irish Examiner. Right up next, we have an in-depth chat with Colm O'Neill and Aidan Walsh about their international rules experience and looking ahead to next year as well. That's up next on The Bench.
Missed the show? Grab the Big Red Bench podcast at redfm.ie.
With Kiri's Hyundai, believe everything you hear. Kiri's of Cork, Mallow and Middleton. Kiri's.ie.
Red FM.
Right, Rory and Lisa here with you until 7 o'clock. Now, yesterday we were delighted to be joined in studio by Colm O'Neill and Aidan Walsh to chat about their international rules experience. Lads were in good form, and this is our chat with them. I asked Aidan first, about the jet lag and if they were over it yet after the long trip from Australia.
Yeah, we're back in a few days, so we're settled back into normal routine again, but... It was probably the last few days after the game. I made a few good days out, so it probably didn't help the jet lag coming on, but we're over that now.
It's been such a long year as well. You must be kind of just happy to have a bit of a break.
Yeah, I'd like that now. Probably it's going to take a month or two off now and start again. So it's been a busy year, but just have to look forward to next year now again and go through all the hard training and build up again for next year.
Colm, trip of a lifetime kind of thing, tell us about the experience.
Obviously it's a great experience for me anyway. It was different than Aidan. It was my first time experience playing against, I suppose, a professional outfit, as we were playing probably against the best of the Australians, probably, and the day probably didn't do ourselves justice in the game, but overall it was a great experience, you know.
Yeah, and speaking of, like, you did a couple of practice games beforehand as well, Aidan, did you? Over there.
We played one practice game against a VFL team. In fairness, they were probably weren't very well prepared for the game, and the scoreline kind of showed that too. But no, like that, it was our first time playing as a group, as 15 and 15, because I suppose we were training for the last 7 or 8 weeks, but we never really had a 15 and 15 game, so that was good for us to prepare for the game. But it was a great effort was put in by the group. Like I said, we were training for 7 weeks, build up to it, and then we got the one challenge game and before the test, and we were prepared well for it, but probably just the first quarter we were probably a bit nervous or something, but after that then we kind of kicked on, and I suppose we just left ourselves a bit of a uphill battle and too much of a score then to get back, but yeah, that's the way it goes. But hopefully, I think next year they're bringing in the second test again, and it's like every fellow was saying after the match, Jesus pity there's not a second test, because we feel ourselves that we would have done better. But don't know, hopefully next year that they'll bring the second test back, and we can try better next year.
Colm, Aidan mentions there 7 weeks of training ahead of it. I certainly wasn't aware that there was that much preparation done ahead of the travelling. You know, it's a big effort, a big commitment, and I don't think most people would be aware of it.
Absolutely. There was probably a trial period for probably 4 weeks, and then there was probably another 6 weeks training, so there was a huge amount of effort put in. Probably you wouldn't probably see it if you weren't really in and around the camp, but as I said, the group and the management and everyone put in huge effort, and we certainly went going over for a hot line. We went to go over and put in a performance, and as Aidan said, we probably left ourselves with too much to do in the second half. And one positive thing is probably in the last quarter, I think we won the last two quarters, I think we won, and I think the Aussies were probably up on their feet for the last quarter, so if there was another quarter you could say you might have catched them. But as Aidan said, it's unfortunate that there wasn't another test, because we were probably just getting used to the game and the tackling and intensity of the Australian tackle. So it was otherwise a huge amount of effort put in, and it was a great experience really.
Aidan, as vice captain, was there any extra pressure on you?
No, like that, every fella, we're all probably big players in our own county team, so every fella had to stand up and be a leader in the team. So like that, it was no extra pressure on me, I suppose. For I was kind of only there if something happened. Michael, really, Michael was the main man and the main talker in the group. So not like that, it was a great honour for myself and to be named vice captain. But I didn't see it as any other extra pressure on top of me.
And Colm, as you mentioned, your first experience of the whole thing, how many of the lads would you have known, obviously aside from Aidan as a teammate, but around the country, how many of them would you have known?
You'd know him, but you'd never really have spent as much time as we did with him. You'd obviously know him because, as Aidan said, they're probably the top players in their own counties, and just as that's one positive part of it, great. It's a great way to get to know the other lads. You're usually kind of battling with them on the pitch, and I suppose from a personal point of view, I probably got on well with the Northern lads. I spent a lot of time with them, so I was saying to them that this year in the league, we've 4 away trips up north, so I was asking a few of them was any beds for a few weeks, but that is a great way to get to know the lads, and in a few weeks now again we'll be probably half and half each other in the league, but it's all Italy, you know.
And then what was it like kind of acclimatising to the climate over in Australia? Did it take a lot out of you?
Melbourne is part. We were in Melbourne for half it and Perth for the other half, so Melbourne is kind of similar enough to Ireland, in the sense that they call it the city of 4 seasons, and one day it could be freezing and then it'd be cold and it could be raining. But the first few days we went over just trying to, you'd wake up at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, you'd be ready to go, because your sleep pattern would be all over the place. But like that, after a few days you got used to it, and I suppose the test game in Perth, it was fairly warm that night, and it was a massive, I think the dimensions of the field were the same as Croke Park, so there was plenty of space in the field, and the interchange in the game is vital, because you have to put in such an effort on your own, it's great to be able to go off for 2 or 3 minutes and come back on again. So that was very beneficial to us, especially when we're used to the heat. But I suppose the first quarter we kind of did the whole intensity of the Australians and the heat and everything kind of probably just got to us, and after that when we got used to it, we kind of just that's when we started really playing well, and that's good.
I've heard you mention the first quarter now a couple of times. Were you surprised by the intensity of the Aussies? Because I mean, you can train all you want amongst yourselves, but until you go up there and play the game against an Australian team, kind of don't know what to expect.
Yeah, like I said, the biggest surprise we got, I'd say, if you were a total outsider and you didn't have a clue of either team and you ask who is more comfortable with their own ball, you would have said Australians, which was very surprising. But like that, they are the best players in Australia, and like I said, a lot of them could put their hand to anything, really. I think they had 7 captains out of the AFL teams that are there at the moment, and they were kicking and they were just moving the ball way better than we were. But like that, when we got the grips, when we actually started to push up on them, that's when they started to take you over the game, and that really set us on our way to get our playing better football. And I remember talking to one of them, Luke Hodge, after the game. He says they just didn't know what to do when we pushed up on them. When you hear that, and you're kind of saying, Jesus, Peter, there's not a second test, but sure, that's the way it goes. And I just look forward to next year.
Colm, Aidan talks there about speaking to a professional over in Australia about how he couldn't handle, and I mean this with the greatest of respect, a group of amateurs from Ireland, because it says an awful lot about our game that you can challenge, albeit in defeat last week, but you can challenge a professional outfit like that.
Absolutely, yeah. I was talking to Paul Orley, the manager, was saying that probably 10 or 12 years ago there was probably a huge gap in relation to the kind of strength and conditioning between the professional Australians and as well as the amateur GA players. But over the last few years you can see that gap narrowing, and that just shows the effort that's involved in as well as being a GA player. And that's a great testament to all the players, really. They're professionals, that's their job. They go to their job, going to work, is probably going to the gym, going training, whereas us in the gym have to go do a job and then do training after. So I think the gap is definitely narrowing, and it's nice to be able to pitch yourselves against the top Australians and see that there's not a huge gap, and it is nice to even in the whole experience, like, it's nice that you're living like a professional for 2 weeks. You're,
yeah,
suppose you're getting up, you're training every day, you have meetings, whatever. It's just, it's a great experience to experience that kind of lifestyle, and it was a very enjoyable experience.
And you got a good insight into that lifestyle, Ciarán Sheehan. I believe Aidan brought you to see his life as a professional now.
Yeah, he took us around Carlton's training facility, and it was unreal to see it. Like, and just to see, even in their gym, they had written up what their programme was that day, and like a lot of stuff they do is similar to a lot of stuff we do. Like, and it's just like, it's great this. It was great to meet up with him and to just see what his life is like now. Like, and I grew up with Ciarán, like, and just to see what he's doing now is just, it's great. And he's absolutely flying over there, and hopefully I may continue for him over there as well. So yeah, it's just like that. It's like Colm said, it's there to play, put yourself against professionals, fellas that are on crazy money. I think you meant that new, he's after signing a new contract, $1 million a year or something like that, and there he was playing alongside you in the field, like, you know, kind of all against him. I know he's absolute massive man, but yeah, it's just like, that's a great experience. And you know, it's kind of disappointing the way people kind of think, oh, it's who cares about that competition, all you're going over is it's a rubbish game and all this, like. But you know, when you get like that, I think the biggest problem is that people actually don't know what the rules are of the game. They're kind of, they sit all in our player straight at, and they turn around, they're watching, and they actually don't know what's happening. They see a fellow with a ball, and then a fellow come up behind and pull him down to the ground, and the man that pulls him down to the ground wins a free, and you're like, what's that about? Like, so I just think it's naivety or the people that actually don't know what's going on, and if they did actually know the rules, that they'd actually enjoy it. And from the response we got from the game the last day, I think it was a great showcase for the game, like, and it just showed, like, when it's played right and when it's played when there's two even teams, that it is actually a great game. And for us as amateurs, it's our only opportunity, our only chance to ever represent our country, like. And for people to be downing the competition and to say, oh, what's the point of doing it and all this, for us as players, we absolutely, it's a great honour and a great achievement for us personally to be able to play our part in the green jersey and represent our country.
Yeah, but having spent time with Ciarán at his club, and as you say, play alongside or against a player who's earning $1 million, after the year you're after putting in, Aidan, with the hurling and the football and that commitment, is there a party that wonders, you know, what if, and, you know, be able to, you know, play at a professional level like that, and you do so much of it at an amateur level, like?
Yeah, like that. Like Colm said as well, Tommy, for the last 2 or 3 weeks we were living and playing like professionals. And so I suppose that you're going to say, what if I was doing this all the time, what would it be like? And so I suppose that day is gone. Oh, back when I was minor, probably I would have absolutely loved to do it, but as things have gone and progressed and the way things have happened, I'm delighted that that's, you know, I just stayed around. And so it's just probably, it was or like that, nothing ever happened in there, so it would have been nice, sorry, at the time, but I look back at it, it all worked out in there.
What do you call him?
No, I was telling Ciarán that when we were showing him around Carlton, the facilities were top class. I was telling him that we're building a place at that in Parky Queeve now, trying to entice him home, but I don't think he was buying it. But yeah, obviously it was, as Aidan said, it's a great experience, the professional lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Just training every day, but as I say, it kind of sounds great, but like it's actually very hard. Ciarán, it's in the middle of pre-season at the moment, he said his training is horrendous, so it is, some people look at it and they think this is a great lifestyle, but obviously yeah, you have to work very hard for it too, you know.
Mm. And Colm, the Irish crowd over there as well was fantastic, probably about a 60-40 split in favour of the Aussies, but it must have been fantastic to see all the Irish people, all the county jerseys around the place.
Absolutely, yeah. I think that's why they probably held it in part, because there's a huge Irish,
half of Cork is over there. Yeah,
there's a huge Irish and Cork contingent in Cork in part, and even after the game, and like even we were going around, I suppose, meeting and greeting the fans that came after the game. There was still 20,000-30,000 people half an hour after the game is finished, and it's a great way for them, I suppose. It brings back a bit of home. Like, some people are out there by choice, and some people probably had to immigrate for work, and it's great to, I suppose, be connected with Irish. And it was great even to out support Australians in their backyard. I think they were kind of, even the first half, because we didn't give much to shout about, but as the second half came in, you could feel the energy coming from the crowd, and they were just bullying for us to get back into the game. Yeah.
And you know, you've mentioned it already, Aidan, the future, the competition is safe anyway, but it was probably one of the best aspects about this year's test is that it was that bit more competitive and Ireland didn't just steamroll the Aussies, there was more competition, even though it was in defeat.
Yeah, like that, I suppose the last two times it's been on, it was kind of a one-sided affair, and it was just great that it was competitive. Sure, I know it was disappointing to lose the test, but it was great that the Aussies are putting out their full strength team. And draw for us, like, we put in like that ever since I came in or started in 2011. We've put in a massive effort into it, and we trained as hard and prepared as best we could, and draw to actually get play the test in, and that to play a team that's not really has the same commitment as yourself to the last two occasions, it was disappointing. But draw this year, no, that's it. We're delighted to win. Australia named their squad. We knew straight away that they mean business this year, and they're going to give the respect that the series deserves. And so like that, we're all delighted that it's continuing. And I look there at certain time or certain period that it was going to be finished up. It was going to be sacked. Like so, but like. I've heard Liam O'Neill saying that, like, the GA is 130 years old. It started 130 years ago, and the International Rules is only 30 years old. Mm-hmm. So when you look at it that way, it's a young competition, and it's still developing. Like, if you go back when GA was 30 years old to what it is now, it's continuously evolved and transformed, and you know, so it's still a young sport, like, and it still needs to be fine tuned and altered and changed. And so I really do hope that it continues, and you know, that it just improves and people get behind it, and maybe we're looking forward, they're bringing it to two tests next year, and hopefully, you never know what could happen down the years to come, that it could go to five or six tests, and it might be something that could expand and evolve, like.
Mm. Colin, the last time you were in here, you were in crutches. You must be delighted to put all that injury hell behind you and kind of wrap it all off with the international rules.
Yeah, I suppose bringing back bad memories. The last time I was in here, twice, just talking about the knee injuries. But thankfully, we're talking about something different.
Yeah, exactly.
Something better. But touch wood, I've had no setbacks or no ill effects of the injury. And if you said to me a few years ago that you'd be going over to Australia representing your country. In here talking when I was in the crutches, I would have left you. But it's funny how things turn around, and just hopefully this year, now hoping for a run with an injury free area.
Does it come into your mind at all? Because I often think for a player that's been hit by an injury a couple of times, you know, when you're out there playing in the game, do you worry about it, like, and doing it again?
No, I suppose when you come back for the first three or four games, you're probably worrying about it, right? It's probably in the back of your mind if I go into the spot now again, you're kind of, I suppose, repeating the incidents over in your head. But I suppose with time and with games and with training, that kind of all goes away, and you just forget about it, really. I suppose you have to be confident in the work you've done in the gym, and you have to, I suppose, be confident that, look, the knee is right and it's strong. And I suppose people were saying you're mad going over there in Australia playing the international rules with the injuries you've had, and said that's an ideal opportunity for to be actually rugby tackled. And but look, it could happen down the street, it could happen in a train, and you can't be living your life thinking what if, and but the opportunity came, and just delighted to take it. Just touching back on Aidan's point about the Australians, I think last year they were probably a bit embarrassed in the defeat and the manner, and I think they've said it publicly. And as Aidan was said, with when we heard the team was named, we knew that they meant business, and I suppose they're a proud nation, and we were going off to their backyard, and they weren't going to lie down. And I suppose it's a great testament for the international rules going forward that they're going to play the best of the best, and I suppose that's as GA players, that's what we want to be, pitting yourself against the best, you know.
Yeah. And Aidan, just looking ahead to next year, with you just focusing on the one code, and I imagine it was a tough decision, but on the other hand, kind of a relief that people aren't asking you constantly what are you going to do next year.
Yeah, I suppose like that. It was like went on for a while, and it was a very hard decision to make. Like, like playing with Colm Lowe and the boys for the last 5 or 6 years, and I was thought of not going training or playing with them. It's hard, and it'll be hard the next few months when you see him on TV playing. But like, I just felt last year was very disappointing for myself personally, in the sense that I felt I didn't perform to the what I'm capable of performing to. And you know, I just feel that I've been very fortunate and lucky that I've been able to win a lot in football, and I just feel that if I just see what happens to give the hurling one right go for the year and see what happens. But hopefully down the road we get the opportunity to play football again and give Colman a few bells in training.
We're still talking, Emma.
Yeah, we're still talking after a few weeks, but I'm just looking forward to knowing, just want to get the head down and focus on it.
Is there an All-Ireland in that team next year, do you think?
Oh yeah, 100%. I think there's an All-Ireland book. That's that was the hardest thing about it. There's an All-Ireland book, hurling and football in Cork, and you know, that's the great thing about being from Cork. You know, Cork will always compete and always be thereabouts when it comes to All-Ireland series, and I no doubt the players are definitely there and the management is there as well, and like that, it's just last year was great. That's we won the Munster, we hadn't won a trophy in 8 years, so it's good to get that or to win that last year. But it was very disappointing against Tip in the semi-final, so we have a lot to prove to ourselves next year, and we're up in Division 1 as well, so that will be a big step up from last year as well. So looking forward to this. Even last Tuesday, I know we got our medals for the Munster last year, and you know, fellas are really eager and enthusiastic, and they're back training already, but I'm just going to take a few weeks off now, but like that, fellas are champion debate and can't wait to get back and for the league to start.
And Colin, yourself then, with the footballers, you've had a nice end to your footballing year with the international rules, but I imagine everybody there eager to get going again now and back in for 2015.
Yeah, I suppose we weren't happy the way, I suppose, it finished last year against Mayo, and so that's all put to bed now, and the lads are back, but you know, it's a week or two and back next week, so by all accounts, they're training hard and everything's going well. So, as I say, we've a tough league campaign ahead of us this year. I think our first game is Dublin at home. I think we might have, as I said earlier on, we've 4 trips up north. So, it's gonna test the team, the strength and depth in the team. And it's gonna give players opportunities to step up. There's no better place to, I suppose, test yourself up. Up in Belly Buffet on a Sunday afternoon, or up in Healy Park in Tyrone. So, as I say, we have a tough league, so that's our main focus, and is to put in farms in the league now, and as I say, hopefully we get a good run of it this year.
Excellent stuff, boys. Thanks so much, Colin.
Thanks.
To come on, Neil and Aidan Walsh, they're speaking about their international rules experience and looking ahead to next year. Really interesting stuff from both of them, Lise.
Yeah, I always like to hear what's going on. I didn't realise that they were training for 7 weeks before going for the international rules, and you hear so many people criticising how seriously they're taking things.
I didn't know that either, because you get the impression that they just went on the plane to Australia and just trained over there.
Yeah, no, there's an awful lot to it, but fair play to two lads. Really appreciated them coming in and sharing it with us.
Yeah, certainly. So that's it from us for tonight. Thank you very much for listening to us. Ashley's up next with Green on Red. Tonight's show will be on our website very shortly, redfm.ie/sport, and we're on Twitter as well at Big Red Bench. We'll talk to you again on Saturday, folks. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday evening.
Missed the show? Grab the Big Red Bench podcast at redfm.ie.
With Kerry's Hyundai, believe everything you hear. Kerry's of Cork, Mallow and Middleton. Kerry's.ie.
Red FM.